We are back on the Bengals Beat podcast. Week one is in the books. Joe Burrow's debut versus the Los Angeles Chargers. And the Bengals fell 16-13. I'm Lindsay Patterson alongside Tyler Dragon and Charlie Goldsmith. How you guys doing?
Doing good. The season's rolling along. It's hard to believe that week one is already behind us. And now we have a game in less than 48 hours, pretty much. So it's another week is upon us, and I'm excited to see a round one of the 2020 version of the Battle of Ohio.
I'm feeling this short week as well. 4 days between games, it never quite hit me until how quick it feels right now.
All right. As we mentioned, Joe Burrow had his debut on Sunday, and everybody wants to talk about it.
Well, he gave himself a D. Now, I am not going to be that harsh on him, and that's credit to him for being his own biggest critic. I gave him a C overall. His overthrow to AJ Green would have been a 31-yard touchdown. That could have been the decisive points in the game. That was very costly. Then, you know, he had that shovel pass that was right to Chargers defensive end Melvin Ingram. That was a boneheaded rookie mistake. But when I look at, you know, his overall performance, you know, he had a 66 passer rating, and only Baker Mayfield and Ryan Fitzpatrick had worse week one passer ratings. So, you know, when I look at his performance in totality, it was, you know, it was okay. It didn't blow my socks off. It wasn't stellar by any means, but he was the only rookie quarterback starting week one. And that validates that he was the most NFL ready quarterback in the draft. And he put his team in position to win a game. You know, if it wasn't for, you know, a controversial offensive pass interference in AJ Green, the Bengals might have won that game, barring a heroic effort by the Chargers in the last second. And then, you know, Randy Bullock, you know, quote unquote, his calves, you know, tightened up, and, you know, he had cramps in his calves in that 31-yard game-tying field goal attempt. So he put his team in position in that two-minute drill to at least tie the game. Unfortunately for the Bengals and fans, they did not come out with the win. But overall, I give Burrow a C for his debut.
So, Lindsay, last week you asked us what would be a successful debut for Burrow, and something Tyler said I've kept thinking about. Tyler said he wants to see Burrow respond to his mistakes. And as Tyler said, Burrow made two pretty big mistakes on Sunday, that missed pass to AJ Green and that shovel pass intercepted by Melvin Ingram. I think in both cases, he responded incredibly well. After that missed pass on AJ Green to AJ Green, here's what Burrow did. They ran on the first two plays of the next drive, but on that third play, Burrow snuck in for a first down. After that first down, called no huddle, ran the only passing play out of the from under center the entire game, and he threw an excellent, I believe, like a 14-yard pass on the left side of the field to AJ Green. It was one of his fastest throws of the game. It was one of his longest throws of the game, and he had the Bengals back rolling. And then after making that pass interception to Melvin Ingram, you know, that could have been it. That could have been all for the Bengals. Yet Burrow, with less than 3 minutes left, as we all know, drove the Bengals down the field and really did have the team in position to win that game or at least send it to overtime. Burrow had 10 passes for 10 yards or more. Four of those passes came on the last drive. Burrow saved his best drive for his last. I give him a C because I think you have to demerit him some for losing, considering how much Joe Burrow needs to win. That's his demeanor. But I do really think he did a great job responding to his mistakes.
Yeah, when we talked to Joe Burrow after the game, him telling us that that pass to AJ Green, that was just a wide open touchdown that a high school player could have made that throw. I think what was really telling was hearing AJ after the game just praise what Burrow was able to do under 2 minutes. And look, it's a small sample size in the rookie's debut. We can all say there's no preseason, no OTAs for the guy, and he's really just adjusting to NFL speed. I know a lot of people were dealing with other similarities when they're on the field. So I think, you know, it's going to take a couple of weeks to really judge how Joe Burrow is going to do in the league, but under 2 minutes, I know his team was impressed with him. I told you guys before the podcast, I want to hear your good, your bad, and your ugly. I have a feeling I know what your ugly is going to be, but I'll be first, Charlie.
My good, I'll go with more of an under-the-radar guy. I think Sam Hubbard played an excellent game on Sunday, especially because the Bengals didn't have Geno Atkins and Mike Daniel was hobbled. Hubbard played inside a lot more than I had ever seen from him. He came up with two pivotal third down stops in the backfield to keep the score close and really help that defense get the stops it needed. He was the Bengals' best player on defense on Sunday, and I think that was a surprise. You know, we didn't see Carlos Dunlap do a whole lot. We didn't see any takeaways from the defensive backfield. Hubbard made more plays than anyone else.
So I have two goods on the Bengals' defensive side of the football. Jesse Bates, I thought, played an excellent game at safety. He had a couple pass deflections, five tackles. Pro Football Focus rated him one of the best defenders in all of week one. I thought, you know, he jumped out when I reviewed the tape again. So he deserves credit for his week one performance. And also William Jackson III said prior to the season he wanted to start having fun again and play like that 2017 season and 2018 season. And I thought he played a really good game. He was on Chargers' Mike Williams a lot. He was also, you know, on their other receivers. And I thought, you know, he did a really good job out there at cornerback guarding some of the Chargers' best receivers in Keenan Allen and Mike Williams.
Yeah, you mentioned Jesse Bates. He actually made PFF's Defensive Team of the Week, so you're going to want to check that out, ranking number four. All right, ugly and you're bad.
I'll start with my bad. I think that the biggest statistical surprise of the game on Sunday was that John Ross played more snaps than any other Bengals wide receiver. He played 12 more snaps than A.J. Green. John Ross had some poor moments, dropping that interception or dropping that touchdown reception in the end zone. And then bobbling that ball out of bounds as well on the last two-minute drive. Ross did have a good catch on that drive. He had about a 15-yard catch to help the Bengals advance into Chargers territory. But some of those moments really leave you wondering whether or not those two plays were two of the biggest difference makers in the game, the ones that Ross didn't catch. My ugly, Tyler, do you want to say it? Do you want me to take it? Mine's Bobby Hart.
Go ahead. You can do both.
I think we're all on the same page here with how Bobby Hart played. Joe Burrow's very first real forward pass of the game. Joey Bosa got a hit on Joe Burrow. Zach Taylor said earlier this week that there's not a competition. He was asked if there was competition. Zach Taylor did not say there was a competition between Hart and Fred Johnson. Yet Bobby Hart did very little to establish himself as a solid right tackle on Sunday.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree. I would say that entire Bengals offensive line in the first half got in my ugly category. That first half, Burrow was sacked three times. He was hit, I believe, six times in the first half. You never want to see your rookie quarterback being under siege like that. So that first half was ugly to me in the offensive line. To their credit, they bounced back in the second half and up their performance and performed well. But Bobby Hart pretty much struggled that whole game. So he gets my bad and ugly. But then I will also say that, you know, Randy Bullock gets my bad too. I'm not going to say that, you know, the Bengals or he are lying about the injury. You know, it's on the injury report, and that's unethical and to put somebody's have an injury that's, you know, false. But for him to miss a 31-yard field goal and to say, okay, my left calf, you know, got a little bit tight in my kicking motion, but then he was grabbing his right calf. So, you know, it just doesn't look right. And still, I wouldn't even have said anything if I were him. If I was in that position, I would have said, you know what? I missed a field goal, no excuses. Now, he did say it's no excuses, but prior to him saying there's no excuses, he said, well, his calf tightened up. So you just made the excuse, and then you're going to say, but there's no excuses. So he gets my bad, too. That was, should have been a chip shot, 31 yards. And, you know, we could be talking about a whole different story if he would have hit that field goal to force overtime. We would have all liked to see an overtime. It was a tight game. I said before the matchup, I believe these two teams were evenly matched, and it kind of played out that way in a football field. But unfortunately, we did not get an overtime because Bullock missed a field goal wide right. But I won't give all the blame and put all the blame on him, because there's several plays that the Bengals missed throughout that entire contest, including Joe Burrow's pass to A.J. Green, and then, you know, a pass that went through Ross's hands, could have been a little long. It depends how you view it. But there, the Bengals had several opportunities to take control of that game, and they did not.
Yeah, everybody, they want Randy Bullock to be cut. And to be completely honest, all NFL kickers are struggling right now. 71.6 of their attempts in week one have converted. That is the lowest in almost 20 years. So if you look even on Monday Night Football last night, I know you don't want Randy Bullock missing the field goal to get you to overtime, but there's some struggling kickers right now. I mean, don't you guys agree that the guy deserves to stay on the roster? Even Zach Taylor told us today he's our kicker as of now, planning on having him kick on Thursday night.
Yeah, yeah. He's earned, you know, more than one chance. And, you know, last year he converted on over 86% of his field goals. And prior to, you know, his missed field goal, he just connected on a 50-yard field goal. So, you know, it was just a bad play by him. And, you know, maybe his calf did tighten up and he had cramps there during his kicking motion. It's just, you know, an unfortunate incident no matter what for the Bengals, because, you know, that's the play that we'll all remember from week one. However, there were more things that happened throughout the course of that game to cause the Bengals to lose.
I think that the Bengals are carrying two kickers right now, and that indicates that they do like Randy Bullock still, and they just felt like they needed to get someone in on more of a short-term basis. Let me mention one quick thing about Austin Seibert, who the Bengals just signed, former fifth-round pick out of Oklahoma. He was the 10th best. He had the 10th best field goal percentage among all NFL kickers last year. So you think he was one of the 10 best kickers in the league? Well, he had the worst extra point percentage since the year that the NFL moved the extra point back. He made about 83% of it, his extra points, and he missed another one on Sunday. So you can say the Bengals should move on from Randy Bullock, but look at the guy they just brought in. He's had some impressive moments as a kicker, but this is someone who statistically you cannot count on as much for that extra point. That just shows you the value that someone like Bullock has.
I'm just going to call it right now, and I'm kind of joking, but watch Randy Bullock kick the game winner on Thursday night. And then I want to see the turnaround on everybody who wanted him out. But, yeah, I think you stick with Randy Bullock, and definitely it's just a short week for them. So we'll see what happens on Thursday night. But I'm going to ask you guys this, though, because a lot of people said, if you're Zach Taylor in that moment, why don't you just go for it? You have your young rookie quarterback. You know, you have the momentum on your side. Zach Taylor felt they had the momentum on your side. Would you guys have just gone for it at that moment? Or are you just saying, let's just get to overtime?
I would have. I liked his decision to kick the field goal. It's a chip shot, 31-yard field goal. You don't expect your kicker to miss it wide right. Joe Burrow's his very first NFL game. You kind of want him to get, you know, that experience. I mean, that would have been his first overtime game. And, you know, yes, the Bengals had momentum, but – you know, anything can happen in that just one play. And if I were the Chargers and they were going for it, I'm sending a casino blitz and seeing how Joe Burrow reacts. And I don't want my rookie quarterback in that situation when, you know, the Chargers have Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram back there with, you know, running with their ears peeled back trying to tackle Joe Burrow in a casino blitz. So I do like you know, Zach Taylor's decision to kick the field goal. Nobody really expected Randy Bullock to miss.
The Bengals 100% would have gone for the end zone one more time on Sunday if they had another timeout. You know, we mentioned some of the Joe Burrow rookie moments. But ones that, I think we're kind of sleeping on a bit are the ones are the moments where the Bengals had to call a timeout when they were on offense. There was one ahead of a big third down where they just didn't get the play call in time. And if moments like that don't happen, maybe the Bengals do get one more shot at the end zone. But I agree with Tyler. Definitely going for the kick there was the right decision, but maybe they shouldn't have been in that situation with no timeouts in the first place.
We're going back to Bobby Hart, though, because Joey Bosa said to the media today in Los Angeles that he felt Bobby Hart was on his own island at the time. I have to wonder why in the world would you have Bobby Hart on his on his own? And everyone wants to know what the competition is like with Fred Johnson. And we talked about it during training camp. It really felt like it wasn't there. I'm not saying that Bobby Hart looked wonderful out there in camp. He was getting beat all the time. But if you're the Cincinnati Bengals, why in the world do you just keep going with this guy? He's not a rookie anymore. I mean, he's been in the league for 6 years, and I don't understand it because Joe Burrow can't take all those hits all season.
To Bobby Hart's credit, he did play better that second half. Burrow was not sacked in the second half, and he was not hit. And then you have to look at who the Bengals have behind them. Now, I know a lot of fans – like Fred Johnson, but I saw Fred Johnson in training camp and Bobby Hart outperformed him. It's just as simple as that. Now, and the limited action Fred Johnson got last year at both right tackle and left tackle, he did well, but the Bengals gave him an opportunity to compete with Bobby Hart in training camp, and he just did not beat him out. And, you know, right now I do think Bobby Hart is the better option. Who has the higher ceiling? I will give that to Fred Johnson. However, right now, Bobby Hart is the better option at right tackle.
So you know what position Fred Johnson played in college? He was a right guard. The Bengals' right guard, Xavier Suofila, as we all know, will be out Thursday and is out for a bit. Fred Johnson theoretically could be the Bengals starting right guard right now instead of Billy Price, but the Bengals clearly believe in Billy more than they do Fred. That shows me that, you know, Fred is seventh in the pecking order. He's not sixth. So that, you know, that continues to show the difference, you know, of what the coaches might, you know, perceive him as compared to what we're saying about Fred Johnson right now. The coaches don't see him clearly as one of their six best offensive linemen. So, you know, with that train of thought, they're less likely to put him in at right tackle.
Yeah, and Billy Price actually struggled on the right side. And I know he came in off the bench. I talked to PFF about it at the end of this interview, Evan McPhillips. So you're going to want to check that out. We talk all things offensive line. We'll stick with the offense right now, and the offensive line is important for this guy. Joe Mixon, he fumbles for the first time since 2017. And what's crazy about it, the first guy that went through my mind, and he was before your time, Tyler and Charlie, you were probably a little kid, but it was Vin Jarvis Green Ellis. You guys remember when the Bengals signed him, they always said he's never fumbled before. He never fumbled with New England. And then he fumbled that game. And I think that he was the running back that came to mind. Joe Mixon doesn't fumble. And Joe told us today, he looked at that fumble 50 times from different angles. Just how do I fix this? How does this not happen again? What happened on Sunday, and are we going to look for Mixon to get on the ground again?
Yeah, it just looked like Denzel Perriman laid his helmet on the ball. You know, he dove at Mixon, and his helmet just right there connected with the football. And, you know, it was just an unfortunate play that happened for Mixon. Like you said, he hasn't fumbled since the 2017 season finale. Yeah, and the chart, what made matters worse, the Chargers converted with the go-ahead score off that turnover. They kicked a field goal to make it 16-13, and no more points were scored for the rest of the game. Now, I liked what Joe Mixon said today, that he's going to use that as motivation for the Thursday night game against the Cleveland Browns. And that's, you know, music to the Bengals' ears. And, you know, has to make the Browns cringe because Joe Mixon had his way against the Browns last year. He rushed for 308 yards in their two meetings, including 162 yards in the season finale. That's his career high. So I expect Joe Mixon to have a good performance because he had over 100 yards in both their meetings last year. and a lot of outside runs. The Bengals found success there in Cleveland and in Cincinnati when he ran to the outside. So I do expect him to rebound from last week's performance, because even before the fumble, Joe Mixon really didn't get things going in the running game. The Chargers kind of contained him pretty well. So I know he's looking to have a bounce back performance in week two.
Lindsay, I thought you were about to compare Joe Mixon's fumble to Jeremy Hill's fumble as well. That was
Yes, that's a great comparison.
But no, Joe Mixon, I think he said this today. This showed a lot about who Joe Mixon is as a player and as a competitor. He said that he looked at the fumble about 50 times, looking at it from all kinds of different angles. He concluded that the Chargers linebacker just made a terrific play. And I agree with Tyler that that is the reason he fumbled. It wasn't some breakdown, but you know, Mixon called it inexcusable. He watched it 50 times to figure out exactly what he has to do to cover the ball at the point of contact. He said he's building on it and he's working on it. So he's addressing the problem like you hope he would. It was a huge play. I believe that play is when the ESPN win probability chart spiked from Bengals to Chargers after that play and the ensuing field goal. It was crucial, and Joe Mixon has to, you know, continue to not fumble for the Bengals to continue to be in position to win games.
We'll stick with the defense. One of the strongest rooms this offseason. Yeah, they lost some depth, but they brought in new guys. DJ Reader, you have a guy like Mike Daniels who was going to rotate in. When you look at the defensive line, right now, when you look at the injury report, it's a little scary because Geno Atkins is still out. Mike Daniels is on the list too. Thank goodness, DJ Reader, it was just cramps, and he's going to be back out there on Thursday night. But with Geno Atkins, should there be a little more concern about his injury?
The Bengals say that it's not, you know, a long-term deal. He did not practice today. I'm not real optimistic that he is going to play Thursday night, considering he has not practiced in over 2 weeks. And, you know, Geno was pretty much an Ironman before this injury. He hasn't been out since that 2013 ACL injury. So, you know, without him in the lineup, and then to compound matters, Mike Daniels has his own growing injury and he missed practice. And I'm not, you know, optimistic that he is going to play either. So it's a good thing the Bengals signed Christian, traded for Christian Covington from the Denver Broncos, because I do expect him to fill the role of Geno Atkins and Mike Daniels if they are unable to play. And then also Andrew Brown could play that defensive tackle spot as well.
I was very impressed by Christian Covington, especially how much more he played than Andrew Brown, considering that Brown had been here for a while. And Hubbard as well filled into that role. You know, Hubbard did say after the game, Daniels just grinded through an injury that he had had since last week and played a solid amount of snaps. The Bengals' depth at the position is being tested, though, arguably more than any other. You know, you could argue a defensive back, but the Bengals' defensive tackle group, especially for a unit that needs to stop the run well, is arguably their biggest cause for concern on Thursday.
Yeah, when you mention that, you look at a guy like Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, and that's just one thing the Bengals have struggled with for a long time now. How are these guys going to contain them? I mean, you have Jermaine Pratt stepping up in year two. Some of the rookies are getting snaps out there. Josh Bynes in year 10 when they added him in free agency. That, I feel like, when you look at this matchup versus the Browns, there are a lot of unknowns. I think the Bengals have the advantage when it comes to the wide receiver room versus the Cleveland corners. But overall, just stopping the run, I think, will be the biggest concern going into Thursday night.
Yeah, I was disappointed in the Bengals' run defense versus the Chargers. I mean, Austin Eckler, he's known as, you know, a kind of a pass-catching running back. And, you know, Joshua Kelly, they pretty much combined for 155 yards on the ground versus the Bengals. And that's not going to get it done. The Bengals gave up 148 yards on the ground last year. They had the worst run defense in all of football. So this week, it's you have two even better running backs in Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, two former Pro Bowlers. So the Bengals are going to have their hands full against the Browns running backs. And if they don't improve their run defense, it's going to be a long evening in Northeast Ohio.
as you mentioned, the Chargers had their two guys in Kelly and Eckler. There were times where Kelly just gashed the Bengals on the inside, and there were times where Eckler made bouncy plays on the outside. Well, you know, the Browns have someone in Nick and Chubb who's better inside, and then they have someone in Hunt who's better outside than the guys the Chargers have. So, you know, if it was a problem on Sunday, the Bengals have 4 days to correct it because the task will be that much tougher on Thursday.
Or Joe Burrow actually said that, you know, he's pumped. He's ready to get back out there. All of them want to get the bad taste out of their mouth after losing in their opener. I look at this game and I just don't feel the confidence on the Bengals side. I know you look at Cleveland and what happened to them week one against, I'm going to say, the second best team in the AFC, actually my Super Bowl pick, the Baltimore Ravens, and that wasn't going to be easy in their opener. You know, they have a new head coach. They're still making adjustments. I don't think a lot of their weapons really have turned out the way they wanted to. And I think you look at this matchup with the Bengals and it's on the road. I'm actually going to take the Browns in this one, 27-14. What do you guys think is going to happen on Thursday night?
Wow. I'm surprised that you have the Bengals losing two straight. I might not have to call you Miss Optimistic anymore. We'll see. I might have to get a new nickname.
This year's about development, Tyler. It's about development. And everyone forgot about that after that first loss. Everyone's like, oh no, they still lost. And, you know, actually it's kind of funny. I felt like my mentions were more optimistic than normal with Joe Burrow and his performance in the 2-minute drill. But yeah, I actually think they lose two in a row.
Yeah, I do agree with you. This is a tough week for the Bengals, and they didn't really show me enough to make me feel confident that they can go to Cleveland. And there'll be 6,000 fans in the stands, too, that they can go to Cleveland and get a victory in week two. And most of that is attributed to their inability to stop the run. And you have two Pro Bowl running backs in the backfield in Cleveland. So I have the Browns actually winning 24-20. I think Cleveland there came off a blowout loss to the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens really had their way with them. And, you know, if the Browns do want to be competitive in the division, they really can't start off 0-2 in the AFC North. And so if they did end up losing to the Bengals, they would start off in that way. So I think the Browns are the hungrier team, and they are at home. And the Bengals, you know, they have a quick turnaround and, you know, right after a tough, heartbreaking loss to the Chargers. So I have them falling to 0-2. So unfortunately, Bengals fans, they're going to have to dig themselves out of a hole here.
I think two things are true. I think that one, Joe Burrow is going to have a better game on Thursday than he did on Sunday. You know, people forget that Burrow had, I think, 51 passing yards in the first half because of how great the Chargers' defensive line was on both ends. And because Burrow, you know, struggled early on, you know, making reads down the field. I think that Burrow figured some of that out and got better, and I think he's going to keep that going. So he'll have a better game. But I think that what decided the game or what kept the Bengals in the game on Sunday were some huge third and fourth down stops. The Browns have players who are more explosive and more talented at every skill position, basically. So a lot of those third and fourth down stops will be plays that the Browns convert. I think the Browns will win 27-21, but it'll be a close game.
It'll be a close one on Thursday night, says Charlie. Make sure you're staying with Cincinnati.com, E&Q Sports. I know you guys are busy a lot on Cincinnati Inquirer right now. Charlie, you have a really cool piece you're going to be doing weekly on Joe Burrow.
Yeah, I will be breaking down Joe Burrow's five most interesting plays every week. I do have his touchdown run this week, but it won't be the, you know, all the biggest plays. It'll be more, again, more under the radar plays. And then also look out on Thursday. I have a story on how Zach Taylor was almost out of football at 20. And instead he became, you know, one of the brightest young minds in the sport.
Yeah, I have a story on A.J. Green and his first game back since December of 2018 and how his body feels rejuvenated and feeling good. And I have three keys coming up tomorrow for the week two game in Cleveland.
Make sure you're staying with Tyler Dragon, Charlie Goldsmith over on Twitter, ENQ Sports on Cincinnati.com. Plenty pre and post game when the Cincinnati Bengals have a short turnaround. Week 2 against the Cleveland Browns on Thursday Night Football. Next, we'll have a Pro Football Focus interview this week with Evan McPhillips. Thank you for joining us on the Bengals Beat podcast. Back on Cincinnati.com, a short turnaround for Joe Burrow and company as they get ready for Thursday Night Football versus the Cleveland Browns. I'm joined weekly from PFF, one of my favorites, Evan McPhillips. He's joining us right now. Evan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for asking. Some good and some bad from the Bengals, but a lot of good and a lot to be excited about. So, hey, the future looks good in my eyes.
Yeah, I told people after the game, there's the good, bad, and ugly. But let's go ahead and get to a little bit of the ugly side, the offensive line. A lot of people ask me, what did Bobby Hart do? How did he look out there? Jonah Williams stepping up in his first season, his first game. Billy Price joining in the second half. How did it look overall for you?
So starting with Jonah Williams, I'm sure that's something that a lot of people want to hear about. He actually had a 63.5 overall grade and a 63.1 pass blocking grade. His 96.5 pass blocking efficiency ranked 44th out of 68 qualifying tackles. And that's a good debut for a guy who doesn't have any previous NFL action. And it's a tough matchup to be thrown into going against that Chargers line. And what you want is to be patient, and those are good results. As much as it sounds that, oh, he's about average, well, that's a good place to start, because we found that a lot of offensive linemen take 2 to 3 years to kind of start hitting their peak and start getting to where they can really reach their full potential. And a lot of that is getting to NFL strength, adjusting to the speed of these defenders, and kind of working on your technique a little bit. And we know Jonah is someone who really refines his technique and works really hard on that. So I don't think anybody's worried about that per se. So I think with experience, you're going to see that kind of creep toward a little bit higher than average. And average is a very good place to be for your offensive line. If you have 5 offensive linemen that are average, then you're saving yourself from having that one guy who gives up the blown block that completely kills the play dead. So Jonah was promising. There's obviously room for improvement, but again, for his first NFL action, that's not looking so bad. We obviously had Billy Price come in as well. He did not grade so well, is kind of a common theme we've seen when Billy Price comes in. He had a 51.7 overall grade and a 47.9 pass blocking grade. And we'd like to assume that, you know, I know he did some offseason training, and we like to believe that player progression is linear, right? Where you put in work on the offseason, you have another year in the system, and you get better, right? But that's just not always the case. And moving on to our next guy with Bobby Hart, we see that that's the case, right? So he's been in the league for 6 years. We know what he is. He's just an average at best to a below average, usually NFL tackle. He's never graded above 70 in any facet in his career, and he's consistently graded in the low 60s, 50s, and even 40s sometimes. Looking at just his pass blocking efficiency from this last week, he had a 91.9 pass block efficiency, which ranked 64th out of 66 qualifying tackles. So right there at the bottom. So it was as expected. And his 46 pass blocking grade really reflects that. Now, if I'm going to bag on him for that, I also got to give him credit that in the run game, he was better, where he had an 82.4 run blocking grade. And run blocking has always kind of been the better facet of his game. But I would, judging by the grades that we have from the last 5 years, that I would expect that that's probably not going to maintain itself and that we're dealing with a smaller sample size. I hope that he can be a good run defender and at least try to make up for some of the pass blocking deficiencies he has. But I'm not going to hold out hope for a 6-year veteran to be exceeding what he's kind of been throughout his career already. So I think we pretty much know what Bobby Hart is at this point. We know he's kind of a favorite of the team, and that's going to be kind of what it is. They like his leadership. They think he's a smart tackle who can help the others on the offensive line. And we know continuity is a big thing for offensive line too, but so is being good at pass blocking and being good at the technical aspects. And we just know he's not that. So you take the good with the bad and you hope that he can kind of exceed what he's done so far, but at the same time, we won't hold our breath.
Yeah, Jonah actually told us that at halftime. I didn't feel at halftime that the Bengals were going to make adjustments on the offensive line when it comes to Bobby Hart. Obviously, they had to with Billy Price when it comes to injuries. But did you feel like the offensive line really started to settle down a little bit in the second half, where Joe Burrow wasn't running for his life?
I think they did. And I think we also saw Joe Burrow kind of settle in as well. You could see when they were going empty early that they were getting a lot of pressure and that they were having issues. And I think Joe was trying to make a lot of plays and trying to create. And we see this, and I always kind of compare it to Deshaun Watson, where Deshaun Watson's going to try and create. He's going to probably take some sacks he shouldn't. He's probably going to make some plays that you're like, oh, what were you really thinking there? But then he makes the exceptional plays too, where you go, okay, that's what you were doing. Okay, I'll let you cook. Go ahead, do your thing, right? And so you don't want to take too much of that away from Joe Burrow. And I think a lot of that was he looked like a rookie who was kind of settling in, who had no action or live action, and he was getting used to the NFL speed. And I think that that kind of helped too, is you could see sometimes we faulted him with a couple of his own sacks that may have looked like they were on his offensive lineman. But as he was navigating the pocket, he was kind of also working his way into the pressure. So I think as the season moves on, you'll see him and his offensive line work a little better as they get a feel for him, trying how he likes to move around in the pocket. And as he starts to see and read the leverage of the blocks and kind of see exactly where he needs to step up and where he needs to be to avoid walking into those pressures while also trying to create.
We asked him after the game if he were to grade himself, what would he give? And he said a D. He was really unhappy with his performance, and he's just a guy who's always really hard on himself. And we talked to him today midweek, right before they take on the Cleveland Browns on Thursday Night Football, and he kind of felt that for 3.5 quarters, he didn't play well at all. But for those final 2 minutes, he really showed up. Were you impressed with what he did under 2 minutes for the Bengals?
Oh, absolutely. And kind of what you referenced there, where he said he started off slow. Looking at the first couple drives, on that first drive, he had the third down. He overthrows Mike Thomas, right? And that's an inaccurate throw from a guy we know to be very accurate. So that's kind of maybe a little bit of jitters, maybe trying to settle in a little bit. And then on the next drive, first and 10, he's trying to create. He keeps dropping back, and he takes that 14-yard sack that really puts him in a hole. And that's going to come with time for him to realize that he needs to throw that away. He needs to get rid of that ball, and that he can't just dance around and create all the time anymore, because these defensive ends and these defensive linemen in the NFL are just too good to where you're not going to have quite the protection you always had at LSU, where you have a lot of time to throw and you have nice pockets to maneuver around, especially with the offensive line being what it is right now. But you did see his struggles with pressure early too. You saw he had almost like 3 kind of flip pass laterals, which of course – one was the first one, which was high in the air and looked like it could almost be snagged and picked off. Fortunately, that didn't end up happening. But then you had the one that was deemed a fumble that Joe Mixon jumped on top of. And then you also had the one that actually ended up in the interception. And I think a lot of those are just he's trying to make plays a lot. And I think he did kind of take a step back and say, okay, I'm just going to take what I've got here and stop forcing the issue. And part of that may be because in college – you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire maybe gets away from that NFL or that college defensive end. He's a little bit quicker, but that's just different in the NFL. And I think that's part of him adjusting to that game speed as well. So after that, looking at the fourth quarter, you see with that 6 minutes left and he's driving down the field, he's moving with confidence. He looks poised. He's making checks. He's changing his protections. And then you have the flip pass that was intercepted, right? And a lot of rookies, this might dash their confidence, but obviously we know Joe Burrow is very poised and has confidence coming out of every orifice of his body, right? So he comes back, and in the fourth quarter he's got 3 minutes left, and he's just moving the ball down the field, and obviously he ends up having that beautiful throw with that placement to AJ Green. And there was a little controversy around, you know, some people think it may have been a push off, others, you know, kind of agree that it was a push, but we can still look at Joe Burrow in that last couple minutes and really take pride in the fact that he showed no fear letting that ball fly. And he also did a good job of feeling pressure, seeing open lanes, and running when he felt it was appropriate and making good decisions in that respect. And down that last stretch on that final drive, he had an 84.9 passing grade. So in that stretch, he was very good, and he clearly got much better from the start of the game to the end of the game. And to see him settle in and kind of become much better, that much better between the start, first snap, and the ending snap of the game is really impressive. And I think that's what we expect from Joe Burrow. And I think with time, you saw some of the missed throws on deep throws to CJ Uzomah, who looked like he kind of fell on that one. John Ross, who looked like he might have been tracking the ball for about 15 yards on that last one, that whether you want to put that on Joe or John is probably a matter of perspective. And then obviously he overthrew AJ on one, but a lot of that's going to be chemistry. We know Joe has good touch. We know he has good accuracy. And we think as time progresses that those miscues are going to go away. And we're going to see a lot more hits than misses on those.
I want to go to the receivers right now. You mentioned John Ross. He didn't have the best opener. AJ Green stepped up, proved why he's the number one receiver. I think Joe Burrow would like that ball back to AJ. That was going to be a touchdown. I mean, there was nobody around, but unfortunately a little bit of miscommunication there and AJ Green missed that. Not a lot from Tyler Boyd. What did you think of the receivers play on Sunday?
Well, obviously John Ross, and this has kind of been a theme with him, is consistency, right? It's still an issue where he had that Joe Burrow down the stretch, had that nice out route to him that he kind of bobbled and lost out of bounds. That would have been a nice catch. Obviously, we talked about, you can see he's kind of tracking that ball for a long time and maybe slows up a little bit to where if he would have trusted the ball to be there and then waited just a hair longer, maybe, because there were two underneath defenders there. And I think Joe Burrow did a good job of kind of pushing that ball, airing it out, and not giving those underneath defenders a chance to make a play on the ball and giving only his receiver a chance to make a play. I think John Ross has the ability. We know that. It's a matter of just stringing together consistently good plays. And if we can see that, which we did at the start of last season, we know how effective he can be, especially with a quarterback who can get him the ball in all of these different levels of the field accurately and give him the best opportunities. I think we need to see more of that with Tyler Boyd too. I'd like to see him get more involved. You referenced we didn't see much of him until the fourth quarter when he had some great plays that were crucial to them moving down the field. And you would think with how Joe Burrow has a propensity to target the slot and just dominate the middle of the field. I think he had a 90.1 grade targeting that middle of the field, the 10 to 20 range in between the numbers. And that's where he excels. And that's where Tyler Boyd can do really good work as well. So I think that we'll see more of Tyler Boyd going forward. I think a lot of this is going to be settling in. I think the offense kind of struggled to get its footing for a while, but you could see as it started to get better throughout the game and get there at the end. And there's some things I think the Bengals can do in terms of play calling to help Joe Burrow a little bit as well. And we can talk more about that, but I think AJ Green being back healthy, showing he can still be the number one receiver, a go-to guy. He had some very exceptional plays on the slants, the RPOs. He showed that he can be the go-to guy for Burrow, and I think you'll see him start to trust AJ Green and his receivers more as time goes on and they build that chemistry and that rapport.
You mentioned Tyler Boyd. I think a lot of Bengals fans are hoping he is going to be Justin Jefferson 2.0 for Joe Burrow this season. We're going to flip sides right now. If you're looking for any positives on the defensive side, the defense had a day. Yeah, despite the ground game for the Chargers, these young linebackers really stepped up. You have Akeem Davis Gaither, Logan Wilson, even Jermaine Pratt in year two. How did they look?
Well, Logan Wilson and Akeem Davis Gaither had low grades. They ended up with a 32.9 for Logan Wilson and a 28.2 for Akeem Davis Gaither. And the reasoning behind that is they really struggled in coverage, where they combined for 5 targets, 5 receptions, and 75 yards. So they allowed all of their targets to be completed. And plus, you're dealing with small sample sizes, right? So that should be, you know, kind of an asterisk that's attached to all these grades, and especially these guys who played, you know, 20 or less snaps, to where one or two bad plays can really affect you. And it can be hard for you without a splash play or a really exceptional play, where they didn't have any defensive stops. They didn't have any of these. So a couple bad plays can really alter your grade. So we can look for that to stabilize as the year goes on. And we did see that they contributed on special teams, which is going to be important too. We saw Akeem Davis Gaither had a role as a blitzer and got some good pressure on Tyrod Taylor as well. So there is a role for them. And I think they'll start to settle in and kind of get used to the speed as well, because as much as Joe Burrow and the offense need to kind of figure things out and get used to it, I think these rookies on defense need to as well. And if you look at Pratt and Bynes, who it seems a lot of people tend to forget about when they say the Bengals just don't have any linebackers. Well, Jermaine Pratt actually came on toward the last 5 or 6 weeks of last season, and I think he was the 15th ranked coverage linebacker in that time. And they actually had Pratt had a 66.4 coverage grade. Bynes had a 62.3, which is, we'd be happy that the linebackers are at least at above average in coverage, right? But the run defense was an issue, where you had 2 missed tackles for Pratt, you had 3 for Bynes. And some of that could be attributed to a bit of the sloppiness with not having the preseason, not having a full offseason to work out and kind of get those kinks worked out and get back into the flow of things. So hopefully we see a little more sure tackling. And I think that will help with the linebackers as well. And I think you'll see their grade start to creep up as we go through the season and they settle in a little bit.
We'll go to the cornerback room right now. Darius Phillips had to step up in that opener. And William Jackson III, he says he's having fun. He feels healthy and just feels like the old Will out there. How did they do on Sunday?
So Darius, he got beat by Mike Williams a few times. He kept getting stuck underneath Williams, which is, I don't want to say concerning, but it's a little bit of a flag because Mike Williams is not a burner by any means. He's a mid to high 4.5s guy, and you hope that's not a recurring thing. But the big thing you want to realize about Darius Phillips is he's still young. He still didn't have a lot of game experience. He dealt with injuries before too. So he's still trying to get used to this game as much as anyone else is at the same time of having this shortened offseason and everything else and being thrust into this starting role. So it was okay. He gave up some catches to Mike Williams. You saw where he got turned around on that one play on the sideline. And, of course, Mike Williams made some good plays as well. But you just hope to see that consistency. And I think that Jesse Bates playing so well, he had a 91.6 grade that was number one among safeties. And if he can keep that level of play up, I think having him over the top is going to free up those corners to make a lot more plays underneath, knowing that they have that guy back there who can give them that flexibility to play maybe a little bit more aggressive. We saw William Jackson with some good plays, and I don't want to bash on Darius Phillips. He had that great breakup on 3rd and 10, I think, in the Chargers back at their own end zone when they were near the goal line or their own goal line. And obviously, William Jackson did really well to start. I think he was he allowed his next four targets to be caught. So started off really well, allowed a few catches there at the end. He finished with a 64.2 grade and a 65.2 grade in coverage, which compared to last season where we saw him struggle a little bit, he was injured obviously. That's good to see him playing at an above average level. Again, if we have all these defenders playing at an above average level, we see what we did with the Chargers where everybody is contributing in different areas where you may struggle at one point or another, but the entire unit as a whole is playing well, then you're going to be in good shape. And you're going to have those games where you're holding these teams to 16, less than 20 points. And with an offense with so many wide receivers and talent like Joe Burrow and Joe Mixon, you're going to give yourself a good chance to be in a lot of games with an opportunity to win.
Browns are just coming off a pretty bad beatdown against the Ravens. I don't expect that outcome when the Bengals face them on Thursday night. They have Nick Chubb on the ground. They have Kareem Hunt on the ground. One of the things the Bengals have struggled with is really stopping the run. What are some other concerns that the Bengals are going to face on Thursday night?
Well, the Browns' D-line versus the Bengals' offensive line is obviously going to be a story. So you've got Myles Garrett. You've got Larry Ogunjobi, who did really well against the Ravens. He was a 94.6 run defense grade. And then you've got Olivier Vernon, who's obviously an established veteran who can probably give some people some trouble on that offensive line there. And that's going to be a big issue. But I think on the other side, if you're looking at it from a Bengals perspective, what advantages do they have? You're looking at the Bengals wide receivers versus the Browns defensive backs who really struggled. And again, we'll go back to saying, hey, this is a small sample. It was one game, right? Well, the Browns starting cornerbacks and their nickel corner all graded under 60 in coverage. Their starting safeties, Carl Joseph had a 54.7 coverage grade, and Andrew Sandejo had a 37.8 coverage grade. So there's room to attack this secondary right now based on what we saw from the first week. Now, they may get some of those kinks ironed out, but again, we're talking about a receiver room with A.J. Green, Tyler Boyd, John Ross. You've got T. Higgins coming in, Auden Tate, Mike Thomas. So you've got options to attack this defensive back room wherever you see fit. And I think the Bengals can take advantage of that. And I think Joe Burrow having this experience, if he's looks like the Joe Burrow we saw in the fourth quarter, I think the Bengals are going to be able to move the ball against the secondary, get the ball out quickly. And hopefully the Bengals do a better job of using play action. They only used play action on 15.9% of their plays, which was near the bottom of the league. But when you were looking at Joe Burrow on those play action, he was with play action, he was 80% completion rate, 10.2 yards per attempt and 109.2 passer rating, which without player action, he was looking at a 61.3% completion rate, 4.6 yards per attempt and 58.8 passer rating. So stark difference there. So you want to see things like the coaching staff making it easier on Joe Burrow, where I tweeted earlier about them rushing on second and long constantly and putting themselves in precarious positions there on third down. You got to make it easier on Joe Burrow there and not give him so many third and sevens, third and tens, third and longs to where you can open up the offense a little bit and be less predictable for that defense to kind of determine what you're going to do and kind of play good coverage on that. And so The good thing about that was the Bengals did a great job of using motion. I charted the use of pre-snap motion the other night when I was watching them again, and they used pre-snap motion on 17.6% of their plays, and the NFL average through Sunday night was 14% per Seth Walder. So they're above the league average. They're doing a good job of using pre-snap motion to kind of make the defense declare, kind of let Joe Burrow kind of see things happen before the play so he can kind of diagnose what he's already going to be looking at and get an expectation of what he's going to see. But you want to see that play action go up a little bit, that play action rate. So hopefully with those combined, they can kind of see, okay, what worked, what didn't, and then apply that to their game plan for the Browns. And hopefully they can use those different aspects of pre-snap motion and play action to take advantage of these linebackers in the secondary that seem to struggle against the Ravens.
Evan McPhillips, again, we're going to be rotating you and our guy Austin Gale all season long. Plenty to talk about with this 2020 Bengals team. Thank you so much for joining us, and what's up on PFF?
We've got Team of the Week out there, which Jesse Bates made, and also there was a little bit of talk about Joe Burrow and how impressed PFF was for him. We've got a lot of content out right now, NFL Week 1, so we're cranking it out, and we've got something for everybody there. We've got betting projections. We've got a PFF green line. We've got a bunch of great fantasy content out there. Well, I know everybody's excited about their fantasy season, so go check out pff.com. There's something for everybody there. I promise you're not going to be upset that you did. We've got some good deals right there as well. You can check out our offers page and get a good discount on a subscription for the rest of the season. And if you want more Bengals specific content, you can go follow PFF_Bengals, and we'll be getting out a lot of Bengals related articles, Bengals stats from the games, and kind of insights. And you can also follow me at emcphil on Twitter, and I will also be kind of analyzing a little bit of more in-depth stuff for the Bengals as well.
Make sure you're following them along, and plenty on PFF all season long. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.